Well, like most things, Bald Eagle Watching Days will be held virtually this year. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Couple of guests to talk with you about the Eagle Watching Days and about eagles in general. One of them, Jeb Barzin, wildlife biologist. He worked at the International Crane Foundation for more than 28 years. And he's been a member of the Fairy Bluff Eagle Council for over 30. Jeb Barzin, welcome back.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you with us. Also, Lisa Gunn, it's great to have her back, an outreach and communication specialist with the Wisconsin DNR. She helps coordinate and publicize information regarding bald eagles in Wisconsin. And she also talks about those community events celebrating their comeback. Lisa, welcome back. Good to have you with us, too.
Great. Thank you very much, Larry. It's an exciting year for Bald Eagle Watching Days and bald eagle lovers all across the state and really across the world, because with the virtual event, people are going to be able to tune in from all over. So we're really excited about that. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to let people know about this.
It's a great opportunity. I'm looking forward to it as well. And as you listen to Lisa and Jeb, I hope you'll join in. What questions do you have about eagles or Bald Eagle Watching Days? We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Well, let's get right into the Bald Eagle Watching Days. It's the 35th one, is it not? Jeb, is that right?
Yep. It is the 5th one, or 35th one. And what's now the Bureau of Natural Heritage Conservation, the fireside, the old fireside restaurant in Prairie du Sac, Wisconsin, and they just had a spotting scope set up there and to watch eagles out the window. And that's sort of how it started, and Fairy Bluff Eagle Council became involved a few years thereafter. We've been involved for probably at least 30, 33 years, something in that vicinity, and we're very proud to have been involved since that time.
Yeah, this year, though, at least as you indicated, things are going to be different. Are the events going to be taped? Are some of them going to be live? Describe that for us.
Sure. So the events are a combination. Some of them are pre-recorded in advance. Last week, for example, Marge Gibson with the Raptor Education Group released two bald eagles in the Sauk Prairie area, ones that had been rehabilitated. So that was videotaped, and that will be paired up with a live Q&A. So people can watch the video and then ask questions of Marge about, you know, everything about, you know, nursing these eagles back to life. And so the events, there will be no in-person attendance, but people will be able to see all of the favorite events from past years from the comfort and safety of their own home during the pandemic. And I think one of the great things is you were just talking to Skip Sommerfeld, and so Skip's probably going to be out Saturday fishing for walleye in his ice shanty or sitting on his bucket, and he's going to be able to watch the programming from his phone. So just a fantastic lineup of events. As I mentioned, we've got the release of a bald eagle back into the wild. That's always super popular and inspiring for people. We've got a live raptor show with Schlitz Audubon Nature Center, eagles and raptors, and then eagles and Native American culture. And throughout the programming, live reports and information from Jeb on bald eagles, just to help people on their own time go to the Sauk Prairie area and look for eagles. So again, we think it's all of the parts that people love from past years, but they're going to be able to kind of see it from comfort and safety, and also watch it at a later date. All the programming will be archived, and they can tune in a little bit later if they want to.
I gotcha. And well, and here I didn't even give the dates. So give us the dates and so forth, any, you know, timing and so forth.
Sure. So the programming will be spread across four Saturdays, January 16th, this Saturday, January 23rd, and then February 6th and 20th. There will be, it usually starts at 1 p.m. and then runs to about 3 or 4 o'clock. And as I mentioned, the programming will be archived. So people can also watch it if they are busy on those days. But they just go to the Fairy Bluff Eagle Council website and can get the stream via that. So pretty easy. And we hope, you know, people tune in and enjoy.
And that website, which I'm pretty sure we have that up on my Larry Mueller Show page. But what would you type in there? Fairy Bluff Eagle Council, is that going to get you to the spot?
It should. It would be fairybluffeaglecouncil.org, O-R-G.
Okay. fairybluffeaglecouncil.org. I'm writing that down so I don't forget it. I can mention it again a few times. So, Jeb, so you're going to be making some comments along the way during the course of the show? Are you going to be kind of the master of ceremonies, or how are you going to do that?
Yeah, you know me, Larry. I find it difficult not to be making comments, at least when it is regarding wildlife. So, yep, I'll be involved as kind of coordinating things and presenting some information that we have on the local eagles. And one of the things that Lisa mentioned just briefly, in order to try to be virtual, we're really trying to find the best of kind of many different worlds that are out there. And so one way is, how do you actually get people to visit and see eagles on their own and visit the Sauk Prairie area, but be responsible as far as COVID is concerned? And so one of the things that we've done is develop a self-guided tour. So you can go to the Fairy Bluff Eagle Council website and go to the Eagle Tour section on that and choose where to go to see eagles in the area. And one of the things that's really kind of fun, because it matches information about eagles with actually doing the tour, is that when eagles spend the winter in our area in the lower Wisconsin River Valley, they don't just sit in one tree all winter long and are, you know, available to be seen. They are very dynamic in the areas that they use, and they can be as far downriver as Lone Rock, Wisconsin, and as far upriver as Prairie du Sac and by the Alliant Energy Dam. And so where you are most likely to see eagles is an interesting question. And so Fairy Bluff Eagle Council does counts every 2 weeks, and we post the information or the results of those counts. And so you can see if the birds are mostly downriver or upriver, and then choose which self-guided tour you want to take to make the best chance of seeing eagles in that area. So we're trying to link the winter ecology of the birds with the ability of people to be out and about in a safe way.
Keith in Wanakee emailed that at the Sauk Prairie Dam, the signs say to stay in your car. However, fishermen are often walking along the shore, casting into the river. Are the fishermen actually doing something illegal when they're doing that?
No, essentially they're not doing something illegal. I mean, if you wanted to really dig into the Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act, if you disturb a bird, you're technically doing something that's illegal, but it's not something that anybody would likely enforce. But what we're really trying to do is keep to communicate with people how important it is to present yourself in a way that eagles are accepting. So a person walking along the shore is likely going to prevent eagles from perching in trees on that same shore. And but if everybody stayed in their car, birds would perch on the trees very close by, so you would have much better views of the eagles. And So the more that people stay in the cars, the better viewing that you're going to have. And lots of people will say, gee, I got out of my car and the eagle was there. What they don't notice is that 10 seconds later, the eagle flew away and then didn't come back to that perch, but stayed on the other side of the river. And it's a very subtle, but it's also still disturbance. And most importantly, or for people who want to see birds, that means that the eagle is then quite a bit further away. And so it is a disturbance to the birds. Whether it's of ecological significance, I can't say. But it certainly changes your ability to see the birds really well. And so we really try to encourage people to stay in their cars as much as possible, because the eagles are used to people in cars and don't view you as a threat in the same way that they would view you walking along the shore.
Yeah, oh, that makes sense. Talking today with Jeb Barzun, wildlife biologist, and he's been a member of the Ferry Bluff Eagle Council for over 30 years, directed their eagle research, as a matter of fact. Lisa Gonmitz, outreach and communication specialist with the Wisconsin DNR. She helps coordinate and publicize information regarding bald eagles in the state and community events. We've got lots to talk about relating to the eagles themselves and the eagle watching days. We'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Jeb and Lisa. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at eagles in our state today, and also celebrating Bald Eagle Watching Days is coming right up, January 16th, the first event, then another one on the 23rd, then February 6th and February 20th. Talking about it today with Lisa Gonmitz and Jeb Barzun. Lisa is an outreach and communication specialist with the DNR. And she helps coordinate and publicize information regarding bald eagles in the state. Jeb, a wildlife biologist, been a member of the Ferry Bluff Eagle Council for over 30 years and directed their eagle research. So as we listen to these two experts talk, I hope you'll join in. What questions do you have about bald eagles? Love to hear from you. Give a call at 800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And some callers online, and I probably should take some calls. Let's do that. John, who's on Highway 61, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, the last time there was a full moon, I was driving from Fountain City to Arcadia on Highway 95. And once you get up on top of the ridge there, there's chicken houses where they grow millions of chickens every year. And the bald eagles get free lunch up there, I guess, when the chickens die. I don't know why they die, but they throw them out. And I saw 50 eagles the last time there was a full moon on that 16-mile stretch of road there. Three wild turkeys were in a field. There was one hawk and one golden eagle, and they weren't all perched in trees. There was a bunch of them circling, and, you know, there's dead deer and things that get hit on the highway. So, and I drive that road every day, 30 miles there and 30 miles back, but at night I can't see the eagles, of course.
Well, John, thanks a lot for calling. Sounds like John's got a nice job there where he gets to do some good viewing, Jeb.
Absolutely. One of the things that allow eagles to concentrate, especially in winter when they're not territorial, is food and an abundance of food. And so they will take advantage of those sorts of resources. It's my guess that though they might stay there early in the winter, towards later winter when snow becomes more frequent and covers up food and it gets colder, that those birds will move to a place like the lower Wisconsin River or the Mississippi River or the Fox Valley, to spend the winter there because there's open water, and that makes that open water essentially guarantees an availability of food if it's there. And so it's that kind of dynamic nature of eagles that I was talking about before. But in this case, we're talking about regional movements rather than kind of movements within a particular winter area. But birds are very frequently shifting from trying to stay on their northern breeding territories and then shifting down to winter areas where they're not territorial. And that kind of dynamic movement is also occurring. And so we're sort of in the middle of that.
Yeah. Lisa, you were going to add to that, I believe.
Sure. I was just going to say, John mentioned that he had been driving that route for 30 years. And I bet over that time, he's seen the number of eagles slowly grow, because that's really one of the things that Bald Eagle Watching Days is all about, which is just this great comeback story of our national symbol. And the love that people have for this animal and the role that they've played in that. I know, Larry, from last year, you know, every year I like to come on with big numbers. What's the record? We weren't able to do our statewide plane surveys because of COVID restrictions. It's a small plane and we've got a pilot and a couple of spotters. So we weren't able to do that. But fortunately, Wisconsinites really stepped in, and we had just dozens of reports of new nests that we did not know about, but are checking out right now. And we also have a growing number of citizens who are monitoring nests from the ground through a program that Madison Audubon Society runs. So it's just this great story over the last, 50 years or so, or even of bald eagles coming back and citizens helping protect them. And, you know, Bald Eagle Watching Days is a celebration of that and a celebration of the work that groups like Very Bluff Eagle Council do to help make that happen.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Kristen in Madison has a comment to go along with the show here. Kristen, hi.
Hi, Jeb. I'm a member of the Eagle Council and lead Eagle Council bus tours when it's safe. And I had a question for Jeb. It's my understanding that we know there's a balance between the energy that eagles expend and their food intake during the winter. And it's my understanding that when you flush an eagle, it may fly across the river, but couldn't it also fly very far and expend a lot of energy? That's one. And also, aren't they scanning the river from the trees for fish?
Kristen, it's great to hear from you. And, you know, your questions are very good. If you want to look at disturbance, so I think what you're kind of relating to is walking along the shore, and does that disturbance hurt the eagles? And it's a very difficult question to answer, because everything that Kristen said is correct, is that if the bird flies more, it expends more energy. And if there isn't an abundance of food, that greater expenditure of energy can be a problem for the eagle. But what's difficult is to understand or to know how much food is available and how much versus how much additional energy is being expended by the disturbances that the birds have. We do know, it's kind of interesting, is that most everybody thinks that will identify the dam as being at Prairie du Sac, in this case, as being important for eagles during the winter. And they're correct. But what's interesting is when the river is wide open, doesn't have much ice in it, very few eagles are fishing upriver at the dam. They're actually spread out all along the river going down to Lone Rock. It's only when there's a lot of ice cover on the river and the eagles are forced to essentially make a choice. Do I feed up near the dam where there's more disturbance and the birds are more concentrated and that sort of thing? Or do I say fly down to Iowa or fly down to Illinois where there's open river and open water down there and I'll have better food availability? And so the birds tend to often choose to stay in the Sauk Prairie area but feed up at the dam. So the point I'm trying to make is that there's all kinds of fudge in the system and how eagles try to balance their energy. And they don't necessarily like to be concentrated, but will if that's what conditions allow. Mm-hmm. So the more that an eagle can remain perched so that it can see the smorgasbord of food floating by on the river, the more it can conserve its energy and yet still find food. And the more we make them fly, the more they're going to expend that energy and the less value that they get from any individual morsel that they can find. So it is good, we think, to minimize that disturbance. But at the same time, there's all these dynamic things that are going on that make it very difficult to say absolutely that, you know, one disturbance of making a bird move versus two versus three versus 20. We don't know how much is, you know, kind of tips the balance for these birds.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you, Christy, for calling. Appreciate it. Paul in Mesa, Maine. Let's go to you now. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Okay. Well, what I was wondering, if I come across what I perceive to be an eagle nest, who do I report it, and who do I report it to?
Oh, Lisa, do you want to comment on that?
Sure. Paul, let's see. We are definitely interested in getting reports of new nests. And when I ask our biologists, well, what's a new nest look like? And they typically say that, or nests that are new to us, ones that we don't know, they say to look for a small nest that looks like it hasn't been added to over the years, or to, if it's one that's in a remote area, those are likely nests that we may not know about. And what you can do, Paul, is actually go to our webpage, the DNR webpage, and look up eagle watching. And on there is a link from under report a nest. And then you can report a nest that way. And our biologists can go check it out and see if it's one that we do not have on our list that we already know to survey.
Hmm. Very good. Thank you. Do you get, I imagine it's hard to get back to everybody, but do you get back, if it's possible, to get back to the person to let them know? Or what do you do in that case, Lisa?
I believe the biologists do that. And as a Rich Stathan, who actually is in charge of the area that Sauk Prairie is in, they had 44 new nest reports, which is pretty amazing. Just from this little, you know, just from this southwestern Wisconsin. So we are, you know, lots of people know about it, and we appreciate hearing about those, and the biologists do investigate them and get back to the people.
Excellent. Thank you again for calling, Paul. Douglas in Lansing, Iowa, it's your turn. Hi, Douglas.
Hello. I used to be the refuge manager on the Upper Miss Refuge back in the 70s. In the Lansing area, up through the Reno Bottoms in Wisconsin, in Minnesota. And the first eagle nest found on the river was in 1968. And we protected the nest and kept it. We didn't tell anybody where it was. And within 3 or 4 years, we had another nest. Now the Reno Bottoms area in Pool 9 probably has the densest nesting population of eagles anywhere in the world. And we did find out several things on the surveys that we've still been doing. I'm retired now, but they have no terror. If they get fish and everything they need to eat, in the Reno Bottoms, the nests are with, you will have 4 or 5 nests within sight of each other. So basically, they're not territorial, apparently, when they have plenty of food, because you can go up some of the backwaters areas and count nest after nest. I think there's 90-some active nests in the Reno Bottoms down through to Linksville now. So I just thought that you might be interested in the information, because the first nest on the Mississippi River was in 1968.
Paul, thank you so much for calling, our Douglas. I'm sorry, Douglas. And I know, Jeb, you were nodding your head there in agreement. You want to comment?
Oh, Douglas is spot on. And there's two really cool things that are occurring that get me excited. And Lisa kind of mentioned that as well. We have this wildlife success story where, if I remember correctly, in 1973, we estimated that there were 8 bald eagle nests throughout the entire state of Wisconsin, throughout the entire state. And Douglas is describing close to that number of eagle nests in a, I can't remember what it is, it's probably a 40-mile stretch of river from the Reno Bottoms down to Lansing. And it is probably the densest nesting number of bald eagles anywhere in the world. And so we've got this wildlife success story of this population recovery. And what has happened is that we used to think at the time that the first nest was reestablished in the Mississippi River Valley, we used to think that the primary good bald eagle nesting habitat was in the Chippewa National Forest, for example, you know, where you had a super canopy white pine that's sticking up there and a nest is in there with these, you know, great musky lakes. And Larry, you know exactly this search image for the ideal nesting habitat. You've been fishing it for your lifetime. And that we thought was core bald eagle nesting habitat. And that first nest in the Mississippi River Valley began to change everything in terms of what we thought was great nesting habitat. So as the population recovered, the birds began to reoccupy places that they hadn't been nesting in for decades, if not for, you know, longer. And now we have all kinds of birds nesting along the lower Wisconsin River, in places like the Mississippi River at very high density, as Douglas is saying. And it's completely caused us to rewrite what we think of as good nesting habitat for eagles. So as the population has recovered, there's been a dramatic change in what eagles tell us is preferred habitat. The other thing that's really interesting is as that changes, we do see changes in behavior of the birds themselves, which Douglas was also relating to. I'm not willing to believe that the territoriality has disappeared in these eagles, but Douglas is absolutely right that you can easily see 5 or 7 nests within sight of each other, so that the territory size of those eagles is reduced, and what they get out of that territory might have been radically changed now under these higher densities. Because ultimately what it comes down to is you have a choice as an eagle. You either breed and accept a smaller territory, or you don't breed, because it's likely the eagles can't breed if they don't have a territory. And so there's all these sorts of changes that are occurring ecologically as we get this wildlife success story.
Oh, really interesting. Nick in Madison, your turn. Hi, Nick.
Hi. Yeah, I was just wondering, I went up to, Ferry Bluff Trail is closed half the year, but I drove up Ferry Bluff Road last year, and I'm not sure if it's a turkey vulture or eagle, but that casts a mean shadow. That's kind of intimidating. I'm wondering if it's okay to do that, just drive up, stay in your car. And what's the best time to see an eagle during the day?
Okay. Nick, I'm really glad that you're asking. Oh, sorry?
Yeah, go ahead, Nick. I'm sorry, Jim.
I'm really glad, Nick, that you're asking this question, because it's actually becoming quite a problem. It's perfectly fine to drive down Ferry Bluff Road. And it's to drive down to the end. You can even get out of your car. It's not a problem being out of your car there, but it's very important that you do not go into the closed area. And the closed area starts just after the parking lot. And it's very clear. There's a big gate. There's a sign. There's a fence that we try to run down to the river and up to the bluff to make it really clear that it's a bad idea to go beyond that. Unfortunately, many people, when they read that sign, they read, everybody should keep out except me. and they walk up to the top of Cactus Bluff, and it's a beautiful sight. I don't blame them for wanting to do that, but it disturbs the bird's ability to go into their nighttime roost. And that disturbance is much more significant than just disturbing a bird during the daytime. You're disturbing anything from 10 to 50 birds. at one time. They don't come back to that roost for a long period of time after that disturbance, meaning days, not hours. And so it's really critical that we protect Fairy Bluff. And the Fairy Bluff roost is probably one of the more important roosts along the entire lower Wisconsin, because it's the hinge for wintering eagles. If eagles are downstream towards Lone Rock, they'll be using areas up to about Fairy Bluff. But when the ice cover increases, the birds will shift upriver, and then they'll be from Fairy Bluff up to the dam at Prairie du Sac, or near the dam at Prairie du Sac. But Fairy Bluff roost is used throughout the winter. So it's a really key roost for the birds to use, and it's one that it's the only completely publicly protected roost that we have in the lower Wisconsin River Valley. And there are other roosts that have some protection, but not a lot. And Fairy Bluff is the only one that's fully protected. So if people who like to go to those areas always read that sign and say, this is to keep everybody out but me, we have a really big problem. And that problem has gotten worse over, say, the last 5 years. And so it's okay to drive down Fairy Bluff Road. It's okay to be out of your car in the parking lot at the end of Fairy Bluff Road. But it is definitely not okay to go into the closed area during the wintertime. And we very much ask that people respect that closure. And it's there for a very important reason. And it's not something just to kind of blow off.
Nick, thank you so much. Lisa, I want to go back to you because I want to talk about Eagle Watching Days again. Could you go back over what people can expect and in this last minute and a half or so, and how to be involved?
Yes, thank you, Larry. So most important thing is go to the Fairy Bluff Eagle Council website, where people will be able to find schedules of all the events on the different Saturdays, again, January 16th, the 23rd, and then February 6th and the 20th. And through that website, they're going to be able to live stream the programming. And also they'll be able to see the self-guided eagle watching tour, that they can come on their own time to the Sauk Prairie area and go to some of these eagle watching hotspots using this tour. And hopefully see some bald eagles in the wild and enjoy what the area has to offer. It's obviously one of the many beautiful parts of Wisconsin.
Yeah, fairybluffeaglecouncil.org is the site to go to. And, boy, here we are out of time. I want to thank you both. We have lots of great questions. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody. But I appreciate your time being with us today, Lisa and Jeb, and hopefully we'll get you back. Jeb, you have one quick thing?
Yeah, ferry is F-E-R-R-Y. It's referring to an old horse ferry that occurred in the area. It's not F-A-I-R-Y.
Yeah, that's a good one to remember. Jeff Barzin, wildlife biologist, member of the Fairy Bluff Eagle Council for over 30 years, and directed their eagle research. Lisa Gomnitz, outreach and communication specialist with the Wisconsin DNR. She works a lot with eagles, publicizing information regarding them, and helps coordinate a lot of the activities surrounding them. So I'm expecting that they'll be back and we'll talk with them again about Eagle Watching Days. Thanks so much to both of you. Just to note, tomorrow we'll talk about whole house remodeling with our home improvement experts. But in the meantime, thank you so much for listening and stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.